When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, hello. How are you?
How are you?
Good to see you.
Thanks
how
for
you doing?
Out.
Thank you.
Doing this with us.
What would you guys like?
You're going to sit here.
Oh, this is awesome. This is like Washington Square Park.
Exactly. Not today, Kyle.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is Jim Norton.
Hi.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, bro.
Thank you. I always hate getting applause first because I'm afraid I'm not going to live up to it. Like I like a nice, a subtle non-intro. Like, here he is, and if it goes okay, then good. But if
yeah,
not,
I should have just started talking. That's my fault.
No. I just panic. Like, whenever I get introed on stage, they're like, hey, great comic. No, just say your next act is Jim, and hopefully they'll like it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's low self-esteem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all suffer from a little bit of that.
I guess, right?
I'd like to think. Yeah.
Okay. For sure.
We're used to being guests on your show.
I know. It's funny. My wife and I just did a rewatch. People would talk to you. We did a rewatch of The Sopranos, and keeping in mind our conversation, because you're like me, where like you don't watch yourself. Like I just, and it was no one could have done those better than you. I mean, I know you know that, but I'm telling you,
yeah.
It was unbelievably good. And I focused on you two more than I had before. Like, just lasered in on so good. And I'm telling you, The Sopranos is a good show. But I watched both of you a lot closer this time. And it was just no one could have done those roles but you two.
So I get it. I made you uncomfortable with the intro. And now it's your turn. We could do that. We could just do this for 45 minutes if you want. We can
no,
just fucking.
But
no, thank
I know
thank
the
you.
Feeling, but I really did. And I know it's hard. I hate getting compliments. I'm really uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would rather get criticized so I can fire back than when someone says something nice. I'm like, all right, thank you. Like,
right.
I don't know where to go with it.
Well, that's like, you're a sober guy too. And like, I hate when people compliment me about being sober. I hate it.
Because why?
I'm like, I did that to myself. And then I got out of it and you're like, wow, way to go. But it's like, no, I did that. Like I caused that to myself. So to try and be like, you know, I hate the feeling of like somebody wants to be like, you did a great job of getting out of that hole. And I'm
well,
like,
they're
but
acknowledging,
I dug the hole.
No one's saying you didn't dig the hole, but they're acknowledging how hard it is to get out of the hole.
Oh, yeah.
That deserves an acknowledgement.
You're both right. Like, technically, because I am sober since I'm 18. So, like, yeah, I it does feel good to be sober. But when people are like, hey, that's great that you're doing that, it's like, no, but it was terrible that I was doing the other thing.
Right.
Like, now I'm just doing what I should be
you
doing.
You got sober at 18.
Yeah. I used to get drunk and call the FBI. Like, I was just I was a weirdo. Like, I was an unpleasant drunk.
It didn't
like,
hit you right.
No, it didn't hit me.
Yeah.
It didn't agree with me. I
right.
was the guy who would cry at the party and cut myself. Like, you know, the melodramatic douche.
And then call the FBI.
Yeah. I used to call Klansmen. I read a book about the Ku Klux Klan. I was going to call them. I was like 17 and angry. And I was like, you guys are racist. Like, I was such an idiot. But I was. That was what it made me, just humiliated me.
At least you had a good cause.
I guess so.
Drunk.
Yeah, I was like a little SJW when
yeah.
I was
ahead of your time. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was my version of Twitter. It was just looking up a guy's name on information and calling him in
wow.
South Carolina.
Right. You're like, this guy sounds like a white guy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to fucking hit him where
I'm just going to lecture him on rage. But I did. I called somebody. He was a preacher in the Klan. I just called to criticize him. And he's like, well, I'm out of the Klan. And he actually talked to me for like a half hour. It was such a bizarre
wow.
moment. Yeah.
You end up apologizing to him.
I think so. And because he was so nice. And he's like, yeah, I left that years ago. His name had just been mentioned in a book, but I was on a half of a blackout. You know how that is.
Yeah.
He's the one who convinced you to stop drinking.
No, that's it. Didn't. That's how bad I was. I was like, oh, this is great because it gives me the courage to make these phone calls.
Right. Yeah.
What
would you say to the FBI?
I mean, I called in bomb threats. I was a problem. I was like, you know, I was a teenager. I called in bomb threats.
So what was the
yeah,
location?
What was the
Where
call?
Was the bomb?
One I called in to the White House. But
the
I was
White House.
I was again, this was in the mid 80s, early 80s. I was probably 14. And I called that one in from my local library. I said there was a bomb in the White House.
And you were drunk at the time?
Yeah.
So what was it? Was there like a final call that you made that was like, okay, this is now I got to stop. That was a bad one.
No, because phone calls weren't the worst of it. That was just one of like that was like the least physically.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? It was just, no, my last day was not even my worst day. It was like one of those things where I drank in rehab. I got out. I drank for another year. And then one day I was just lecturing somebody on sobriety while I was drunk. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And the next day I'm like, I'm going to try to save my girlfriend, like my relationship. And I just never drank again.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was, good for you.
Yeah, but that last day was not the worst.
Right.
Yeah, there's a weird thing of my friends who, like, because I have friends who are sober, I have friends who still drink, but then I have the friends who, like, they love to call me and be like, hey, bro, I'm 2 months sober. And I'm like, okay, like, cool, yeah, great. And then, like, you know, they call me and they're like, yeah, I'm 4 months sober, I'm great. And then the next time I talk, they're like, yeah, I'm 1 week sober. And I'm like,
yep.
I'm like, you, like, I'm like, maybe just don't say anything till you hit, because it's, again, it's not once, it's not twice. It's been like 10 years now where they're always telling, and again, I don't know the playbook, I don't know what you're supposed to do, but it's like, I would imagine it's so depressing when you go and you make those calls to everybody and you're like, I'm this many days sober, this many days sober. And then you're always falling back in.
Yeah. I find they make me grateful. I'm like, hey, I'm here if you need me, but like, whew, thank God I'm not there. Still doing it. Yeah, yeah. Like it could be worse. No matter how much I complain, at least I'm not going to get a DWI. At least I'm not going to, you know, again, call the FBI drunk, or thank God they didn't have Twitter when I was drinking. Like, I feel bad for anyone who's like under 18. And your whole teenage life has to be acted out in public on Twitter and Instagram.
This is true.
Oh.
Yeah. I thank God every day that it was not around when we were young. Not that I like would have had much to cover up, but just the pressure around it in general just feels like too much.
Yeah. Any opinion you give is wrong. Mm-hmm. And any opinion you give, you have to apologize for in 5 years because half the population hates it. Like there's no way just to kind of smoothly sail through teenage years. I don't think on social media. I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know fucking how people do it, but we were talking about Lucky Louie before we started. I wanted to know, like, were there any roles that you ever saw on like TV or movies that you were like, fuck, I should that was my, like, I should have been, that would have been perfect for me.
No, just the opposite. Anyone I've done, I'm like, God, anybody else could have done that better.
I never
think I think Lucky Louie worked for me because, again, I knew Louie so well. And
you were great.
Thank you. And it was in front of a live audience. So it was like, it was a different tone. But no, I mean, I'm a comic. You know, I've acted. I love when comedians like complain that actors get into comedy. They're like, this fucking actor's doing stand-up. And I was like, well, how many stand-ups are acting? Like, we've invaded their life too. Like,
you know, I think comedians are great actors though, is because you guys know yourself very well. Like, you have perfected or really spent a lot of time crafting your lane of humor, your delivery, like your voice. I just feel like comedians just are very centered in their, like, their who they are and how they present themselves. And I think that's very powerful when you're acting, because as long as you're kind of like not trying to be anyone else and kind of just bringing yourself to it, I always think it's better.
It is, but it's also kind of a catch-22 because you develop such like a hyper-awareness of what you're doing that I also know when I suck. So I can't, like, if I'm doing something, I'm like, you're terrible, you're pretending. Like, I just, I can't turn that
that's
off.
Neither can we. I mean, neither can I when I do something. It's, you know, that's, I think, an artist, though. Like, you're never satisfied. You're your own worst critic. You're always trying to perfect it or make it better. I think that's very natural.
It's weird stuff, though, like with acting. Like, when you walk in, and just like when someone has to just stand in the room and say something.
Yeah.
Like it's just the awkwardness of just standing there. In real life, it's not awkward.
Right.
But like when acting, when I watch people doing it and it looks so natural, I'm like, whether or not they're comfortable, I can't tell.
Yeah.
It looks completely comfortable. And then I'll do it. And I'm just like, I'm completely stiff and my arms are hanging. I'm like, your fucking arms are dead. And I'm too aware of everything and I'm not in the actual.
Yeah.
Like if we were acting out this conversation, I would suck.
Of course.
No, I would be, I enjoyed you. I would just do it wrong. I would overdo it. But in real life, it's easy. But acting, I admire people who can do it because I can't.
But that's what's so great about comedians is like, if somebody saw you being awkward in the back of a scene, they'd be like, oh, he's doing a bit. Like, like my friend, so my buddy Cassim, when we went to his brother's wedding, like he would get up and dance, but like he danced kind of crazy, but you're like, oh, is that kind of good? But is he doing a bit? And like, you don't really know. So it just becomes like, oh, you're such a fun dancer.
Yeah.
Like, so it's the same thing with acting where it's like, oh, look, Jim's being funny. But like, you know, you're not really doing well when you're acting when you start thinking about your hands.
Yes.
That as soon as like take one of my hands, I'm like, oh, I'm done for the day. Like I'm like I'm done. Like I'm like, what? Why is my hand just like this, like in the air, like you know? And then I'm just fucked. I'm like, oh, that's it.
There is was a running joke on the radio show that I would always talk about acting, and I didn't know what to do with my hands. And it is a crazy thing. Pacino even said, I think, that he's like, he does this a lot with his hand. Like he'll slowly do this if you watch, but he's been aware of that. Like he notices what he does with his hands. I guess every actor kind of feels
that. I talk with my hands.
I think that's great though, because that's naturally how
I don't know,
are.
But sometimes it doesn't work for every role that you're trying to play, but I do this naturally. But then I also notice that when I'm acting, I do this a lot.
Have they ever asked you not to do it? Have they ever said, look, your hands are just... distracting.
You're not Italian in this.
Yeah.
Or you're supposed to be paralyzed. Yeah.
I'm not recalling, but I'm sure they have. Or they just cut me out.
But I'm more thinking, because like I don't really think about my hands when I'm talking. It's more when, like you said, when it's like, okay, you just have to be standing in the background somewhere. And then all of a sudden you're just like standing there and you're kind of listening. And then you see something and then you're like, why is my hand? Like, you know?
Yeah, just we're walking into the room and just talking without something to lean on or without something to hold. Just standing in the room talking with your hands down is, I become so hyper aware of what I'm doing that I panic.
Jason Bateman, I auditioned for him one time for something he was directing a million years ago, and I'll never forget. He was so sweet, and he was like really trying to help me get this part. And he had said to me, just bring some sort of business with you. Like, have a pen, have a paper. He's like, always something that can keep you a little busy in a scene, whether it's even just something holding in your hands, like, really helps you kind of ground you into the scene. I'll never forget it.
Did you get the part?
I almost did. I didn't. Okay. I'm glad I didn't in hindsight, but I learned a lot during that audition process. It was actually the first audition I had after Sopranos. So it was like, you know, you were kind of in this really safe space for a while, and then you're all of a sudden out in LA and, like, testing for things, and that was all new to me. So it was like... I was very grateful that my first like foray into that was with him and these people that were really helping and guiding me.
Yeah. How much pressure is it for you guys? Like, cause you're coming off this masterpiece and then you have to go out and try and do something like, okay, now we have to start over with this It's hard, right? Cause people have expectations. Like when I see really big comics go on at the Comedy Cellar, a lot of times they'll walk in with just brand new material. And Chris Rock and all those guys, I've seen all of them bomb because they'll just come in and work out the material. Mm. But the crowd has such an expectation when they walk in. I'm sure it's the same when you're coming to such a huge show and you're doing an audition. You probably feel that pressure that they expect something.
Maybe a little bit. I don't know. I was still pretty young, but I do remember kind of feeling like I was desperate to break out from any like typecasting that was made for me, which I think hindered me, because I think it pulled me away from like what made me special. You know, I feel like now I'm trying to lean more back into it. Like I was trying to lose my New York accent and I was trying to just make myself like every other girl, and that didn't serve me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I guess you got to go with what you have. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it was like it wasn't that auditions, I felt that pressure from them with The Sopranos, but it was, I always expected so much of myself in an audition and I always was terrible. Like I'm the worst at auditions because I basically learned how to act on set around everything that then when you put me in like a all white room with some person who's like reading and not really paying attention and doesn't care and is like checking their phone, I'm dead. Like it's all, I remember I had to do like a war movie. Like I've probably done 4 auditions in the last 20 years, I don't know. I hate acting, but I got this one call to do a script for like a war movie, and I was like, that would be kind of dope. Like I like that shit, obviously, like Saving Private Ryan style. I'm like, that would be sick. And I remember like I was reading it over and over, and I'm like, I think I got it. I think I could do this. And I get in the room and it's just like a white wall and like wall, and this woman is like she's like, okay, interior day soon. Okay, we're outside. There's people shooting at us, and go. And I lost all of it. I had nothing. Like I just stood there looking at her, and I was like, and I was like, I think I'm gonna go. Like, she was like, no, let's try it again. And we tried it again. And she's like, okay, get down. They're coming. Like the Germans are coming. And I was like, I was like, I can't do this.
That's so hard, though.
Yes.
That's like.
But a good actor, I think, could do it. I have nothing. I gave nothing.
You gotta be a little bit crazy.
Well, you are a good actor. It's not about being a good actor. It's about being a comfortable auditioner. There's a huge difference. You are a good actor. I told you. I watched it again. With like keeping in mind our conversation, nobody could have done that role better than you. And I really mean that. Like, so it's not about being a good actor. It's about being a good auditioner, which I'm not. But then again, I also get on set and I'm not particularly good there either. But I mean, like, as an auditioner, I'm horrendous. I'm a bad auditioner. It's a
hard. I'm
not great either.
I think in Sopranos, I had one good scene and that was it. But again, I haven't seen it in that long, but I just remember there was only one time where we did a scene and I was like, oh, that was good.
No, maybe that self-perception is always a little off, but just again, watching it, it's funny that you feel that way. And I get it because as a performer, I'm also fucking crazy. And I'm like, ah, fuck it. But just watching it from the outside, I can tell you, there was one scene where you were running. You were just being like the teenager. And my wife even goes, even his fucking run is perfect. Like, it was just, it was so good. And if you don't see it, it's like, I get how that can happen from your point of view, but from the outside, just trust me. People watch it, and it's 100% perfect fit. But I understand the discomfort in hearing that too.
But I even like when I had one good scene, and then I felt good about it. Then the next day, I was like, "You're a fucking loser," you know. I was like, "Look at you thinking you're a fucking good actor, you piece of shit!" Like I had to yell at myself and hate myself. Zolo's typing. He wants to know what scene it was. It was
That's funny.
I think we might have talked about it. I'm outside of the police station when he comes to pick me up at the police station for, I think, trying to kill Uncle Junior. When I tried to kill Uncle Junior, and he's telling me, like, you're a good guy.
Yes.
You know, and I'm saying, like, you know, whatever. Like, you love The Godfather. You love gangster shit. Like, you're, again, I want to be, you know, and crying and this. And that was the only time where I was like, oh, that was good.
He's like, yeah, those were movies. That was a great scene.
Otherwise, I fucking hate it.
Dude, like, you panicked and dropped the knife. I mean, it was perfect.
It was exactly the
way life probably is for people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You were the son who just couldn't do what his dad did.
It was,
again, I'm explaining The Sopranos to you, but I mean, watching it from the outside and not having been a part of it, it couldn't have been anybody else. I'm telling you, they couldn't have found anybody to do that role.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, what David Chase always talked about is like what you're saying kind of is like, he always would be like, whatever people want, I won't give them that, you know? So it's like, oh, if they want to see AJ go in, and maybe it's like, no, he's going to drop the knife. And like, he's going to, so it's like even when you think you're getting what you want, he was like, nope. Like, you know, dude, just pull everything. And that was like, that takes such balls.
Yes.
To not get,
because it's discomfort. Like, wow. In, like watching, when you watch somebody do something in a scene and you're invested in it and they fuck it up and they drop the knife, you're like, oh, like it's have
human.
A visceral reaction. Yeah. You feel something.
Yeah.
But if you do the predictable thing, the quote unquote TV or movie thing, it's cool, but there's no feeling that comes with that. But when somebody drops the knife or they do something, like even when you're pulling yourself out of the pool and trying to throw the rock, I've done that, like not with a pool, but where I cut myself and I woke my parents because I didn't really want to die. It's like that,
wow,
that embarrassing cringe of it, you know what I mean? I felt that a lot more than I would have felt if he just found you there. Like the way you fucked it up and tried to save yourself, that was uncomfortable to watch because it was a very realistic thing that happened.
Thank you. So when you talk about like cutting yourself or something, like how does that start? Like what's the first day where you go like, I think I'm going to try this, or like does somebody suggest it to you or?
No, you're drunk and you're not thinking, and it's like, it was like emo before it was called emo, like the teenage melodrama, suburban angst, just an asshole, just, you know, with a box cutter. But I was always drunk. So I just, it felt like something. I don't know exactly what it did, but you do it and you bleed and you see like a reaction. And there's something there.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be dead. It was like attention seeking. And then the one time it was really bad, I went to the hospital on purpose.
Is that when you woke up your parents?
Yeah. Yeah. New Year's Eve, 85 going into 86.
Wow.
I was, it was really bad. And I woke them up and I went to the emergency room. So it was kind of like that. That's why that scene reminded me of that. Like the thinking you want to do something, but then you're like, oh, I've taken a step too far. This is real. And this is going to work.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. And so what? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said right.
Oh, is the first thought like, I don't want to die? Or are you so beyond the like normal thoughts of a human where you don't even go like, I got to wake up my parents now? Or is like, how does it?
You go into panic mode, like the embarrassment of going, ah, oh, fuck, I did this. I don't want to wake my parents. Like there's a humiliation with that. But the instinct to survive and to go, oh, it's almost like if you're running out of a car that's burning or whatever, like you're not thinking about the A, B, and C of it. You're just like, the whole task is get out.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it was, is just stop this. Whatever this is, make it stop. And the way to make it stop was to knock on the door and then go to the hospital. Like, and then the embarrassment kicks in. Like, as you know, then the fucking, the drunk wears off.
And you're right. Like,
but in the moment, you're so fucked up, you don't think.
Right.
And how did your parents handle it?
I mean, my dad's sober too. So, I think they realized, like, ugh, this idiot. But they were always worried until I finally got sober. My dad's been sober since I was two. So I was always kind of aware of it that, there's a way out and a way.
Right. Do you feel, because you got sober and you're 18, are there moments where you feel it's a challenge or no? Because you've really known all your adult life being sober.
Yeah, but I'll see. The hard thing now is the pot being everywhere. Because with pot wasn't that bad for me. I mean, I can't smoke it because of where it will lead me. But I mean,
you just know it. You wouldn't be able to control it.
No, I'm a weak link. Like, you know what I mean? I have one cookie. Like, I just can't. I'm a fucking compulsive idiot.
Yeah.
And the legal pot everywhere. Like going into weed stores. Somebody close to me smokes weed, so she'll want pot. All right, here's the credit card. But the idea of that is so beyond my comprehension that there's fucking pot stores in New York you can just walk into.
It's wild. Right, to think about. Yeah. You never thought you'd see the day.
Yeah. And then I see Rogan, like, you look at the way he smokes and, like, he gets a lot done. But I have to remember, I'm not that guy. I'm not jujitsu.
Smoke every day or no? Just like he'll pick and choose it.
I would think so. I mean, I don't see him every day, assume he smokes a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it wouldn't surprise you if it was every day.
Springtime is coming and I'm feeling a little nostalgic. Remember the good old days when spring break would roll around and we would spend all our time out in the sun and having fun? Well, just because we're older now doesn't mean we don't deserve a little excitement come springtime. That's why I've partnered with DraftKings Casino. This spring, DraftKings Casino is celebrating the sun, fun, and spring break thrills with an exciting new offer you won't want to miss. All new customers who download the DraftKings Casino app, sign up using promo code NOTTODAY, and play a minimum $5 will instantly receive $100 in casino credits. With over 300 real money games from you to choose from, including favorite slots, blackjack, roulette, and live dealer, plus an assortment of DraftKings exclusives, there are so many ways to have fun. Head to the DraftKings Casino app right now. Sign up using promo code NOTTODAY and play or wager a minimum of $5 and get $100 in casino credits instantly.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 and over. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per new customer. Must opt in and make minimum $5 deposit within 7 days. 168 hours of registering new account. Max match $100 in casino credits, which require one-time playthrough within 7 days, 168 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/newplayeroffer 2024.
To some people, it just hits right. Yeah. You know, like it just gets you in a good space. I, by the way, I know people that alcohol hits them right.
Yeah, they have one or two. And like,
one of my best friends, not even that though. Like when she drinks, she's just joyous and happy and feeling good about herself, and she doesn't make bad choices. She's like, I don't drink for a lot of reasons, but mainly because I've always been had done something that embarrassed myself when I drank, and I always would get emotional, and I never felt great the next day, not even physically, but just like about what I did. It was just never worth it to me. I already dealt with so much insecurity. I'm like, I don't need to layer another reason to feel like I'm an asshole every day.
Oh, the crying, the emotion. Oh, yeah. No, I was a fucking buzzkill. I was having fun. Yeah, I wasn't funny at all when I drank. I was like that crashing, fuck it. Like just a terrible, embarrassing drunk.
It's just not good for our body chemistry.
No, mm-hmm. No. Some people, it just hits that way. Mm-hmm.
In all my years of drinking, I think that happened to me one time where I got drunk and cried. I think it was because I heard a song.
Oh.
And it just hit me.
Do you remember
the
song? Want anything else?
I don't
though?
Even want to fucking talk about it. Fuck that. No way. I can't. What? It's so, no, it's so embarrassing.
I'm gonna need to put it on the switchboard.
Yeah. Sometimes when we touch.
It was a song from Ghost. What is the
really?
The Unchained Melody?
Oh,
no, I'm kidding. Right. It wasn't Unchained Melody. What have you, when you think about like embarrassed, when you're like, because when I think of you drinking, I never thought you were embarrassing or like did embarrassing stuff.
It was mainly with boys. I remember there was this one guy that I was like, dating a little bit, and then there was like an awkwardness at like a birthday party of mine, and an ex of mine showed up, and he was just kind of like, you know, and I was thinking we were going to go home together, and he's like, nah, you know what, you go home to your place and I'm just going to go to my hotel. And rejection. I was like, that's what I said. I said, I feel like you're rejecting
that's
me.
That's not good for Yamie Lee.
Which is so
Yamie
embarrassing.
No, and nobody rejects Yamie Lee.
That's
nobody
not true.
Puts
I deal with
corner.
Rejection all the time. But when this guy's saying this to me and I'm drunk, I was like, you're rejecting me right now. You know, like I just put out for you last night. You're rejecting me now. So I would never make that choice sober. I would like logically be like, okay, douche, like, bye, we're good.
Did you ever see him again?
I don't know if I've ever seen him again.
He's in the other room. It's her husband. Cutter. Cutter, come in here.
I don't know. No, probably not, because I'm not remembering ever seeing this man again. But yeah, I just don't like how I speak. It's almost all my insecurities come out of my mouth.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. That's what I think about now is like how cringe it would be if I had like the iPhone back then and you sent like videos to girls being like, I miss you, you know, or whatever. That would be the absolute fucking
We'd have so many more
worst.
Memory lanes.
Oh my God. It would be fucking just so embarrassing.
Or the female friend that you like, I could show you what a relationship is.
Oh, yeah. It's like, he's not good for you. Like, you
the
know?
Guy friend, but on video. Hideous.
Oh, my God.
Hideous.
I probably would have been on your mom's house as a guy who's just pathetic and right. Like, oh, look at this guy who sent this message to this girl. Oh, my God. What a loser.
Yeah, it really is pathetic. But I was that guy. Like, I that's one of those things that keeps me away from getting fucked up is I know I'll be that guy again. Like, just that, like, I'll humiliate. Somebody said one time about sex addiction, they said, my addiction will humiliate me. And I think about that a lot. I'm like, any addiction I act out in eventually will humiliate me. Mm. If I drink, I'm just going to humiliate. Like, I don't think about death or I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to humiliate myself.
Yeah.
And that's a tangible consequence that I can wrap my head around.
Right.
It really is. I got into a fight with one of my brothers one time and didn't speak to him for years. And I didn't, like, because here's the thing. There's some people who I got into fights with when I was drunk and you're like, well, yeah, I meant that. Like, we got into a fight.
Yeah.
I didn't mean a word I said. I was just fucking drunk and mad and it hit me at the right time and we didn't speak for years. And I'm like, that's the most embarrassed. Like, it's so embarrassing.
Who reached out finally?
I reached out to him. I got sober and I was like, you know, doing my meditation, like reading and sitting out on like a lawn and this. And I'm like, I reached out to my other brother and I'm like, what's, don't
you
laugh
got
at my
sunlight again.
Yeah, yeah. I got sunlight for the first time in 15 years. Yeah. I saw the sun and I was like, oh yeah, my dad had a son. It's my brother. I hit up my other brother and I'm like, yo, don't tell dad, but, you know, give me our other brother's number. I need to reach out to him. And it was like within 10 seconds, he was like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, it's all good. Like, yeah. And it was, you know, poor guy has my name tattooed on his back. And I didn't speak to him for like 3 years.
Really?
Know? He has all of our names like tattooed on his back, you know? And I'm like, oh, it makes me feel so. I see a picture now with like
there's just
tattoo.
One name crossed out.
Yeah, exactly. Deservedly. It would be okay. I would totally understand if my name was crossed out on his back. Yeah. I was just, it was no, like, I had nothing but love for him. And just out of nowhere, you're like, you know, like he texts me like the wrong thing or I took it the wrong way. And I'm like, fuck you. Like,
yeah.
You know, you're just like, yeah.
But at least you made up with him. Like some people do that stuff and never make up. Like they die with a regret. Like at least, all right, 3 years, but you're both relatively young. It's done. You're good and you're back now. Like at least you made up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just liked hanging it over my dad's head. You know, every time I'd see him, he'd be like, "Can you just talk to your brother?" I loved making him beg. You know,
yeah,
and just being like, "No, maybe I'm
that's
not
good
talk.
For him."
Yeah.
Is he happy now that you're made up?
He was very happy when it happened. Like, and I just like I was getting out of his car, and like I look at him, and I was like, "Oh, Dad," I was like, "Yeah, me and Mike are talking again or whatever." And he was like, you know, he's really happy.
Yeah, I don't spend a whole lot of time with my family. I love my family, but I don't go see him much. My wife makes me a better son and a better brother because she's like, let's go see your mom. They're old, your parents, aww. You know. So I'm like, I do it more because I feel more normal now that I'm married. I used to just be alone. I mean, I'm 55. I was like 52 going to my parents by myself. I just feel like a dick. But now that I have somebody with me, it just feels like I'm more of a regular person. It just feels more
interesting.
Normal. Yeah.
That's a very like, you know, a great way to describe like one of the many reasons to marry somebody or like they make me a better son, a better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is good.
But I got married. I mean, I never planned on getting married.
You didn't?
No. She's from Norway. So I was like, I didn't know if she would get in the country. And we kept trying to get her in to visit. And she couldn't. they kept saying no because she had a teeny pot charge.
She's the one person who can't get in this fucking country.
Dude, it's crazy. It's 100% it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you hop the fence and you're in. But with her, we did it legally. It took 5 years.
Wow.
She's got to go through Mexico. She doesn't know.
I thought of I put her up in Canada for a while because I could go visit her. I could drive up from New York. I literally would drive home and think if I had put her in the trunk, she'd be in the States already. You start thinking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably have equipment that can see through the car. Glad I didn't do that.
Right.
But
yeah, you start to fantasize. It's not a drive-in movie theater.
Yeah. Exactly. We're not going to see E.T. This is fucking Customs and Border Patrol.
Yeah.
But so I got married on a 90-day fiancé type thing. But we were already years into it by then.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've married 2 years. I'm very happy I did it. But I don't know if I would have done it if it wasn't for that. But I'm glad I did.
So did you get married in Canada before you came here, or was it?
No, I wanted to do it in the U.S. because I don't know what the rules or the laws are.
Right.
I'm like, let's just, when she gets in on the fiancé visa, we'll do it. We haven't had a wedding yet. We've just did like the paperwork thing in down at City Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we want to
have
a wedding.
You do?
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to spend the money for it, but it's like she wants one and I want one, so we'll probably do it.
Like a celebration, or you'll actually do a whole ceremony thing?
She wants it. She wants to. She's like, I want a priest. I'm like, look.
Oh, she's a traditional.
She is weird. Yeah, she's like a very old mentality, like a very older lady mentality.
Yeah.
Like she wants a nice, I'm like, I don't want that. Let's just have a party. So we're going to have to compromise. I just want to have a party. She wants to have like an old wedding, so maybe we'll do something in between.
Right.
So what is the process like, that 90-day, like getting somebody in? Like, what's the worst part about that whole thing?
The fact that the government still uses the U.S. Post Office. Like, everything is antiquated. You ever go to the point, like, everything they run, they fucking take time with.
I mean, it's been a minute, but when we had to get our marriage license, it just felt like this process should, we're like living in the 2000s here. Why is this process like so tedious? It's like the DMV too. It's like feels very old and very like should have a better system.
Right. Why is everything moving at this pace? Like,
yeah.
The worst part of it was getting a waiver, because again, it was a minor charge for a text message about pot. It was literally that crazy.
Are you serious?
$100 fine. And
for a text message about pot?
She said it was about hash. She had sent a friend a text message about hash. Her friend in Norway got arrested on an unrelated charge, and they scrolled through her phone and found the text.
Oh my God.
My wife was 18. It was so stupid. She never got arrested. There was no possession. But the fact that was in the record made her inadmissible into the United States.
Wow.
And so you need a waiver. Thank God it was a small charge.
Meanwhile, we have sex offenders walking all over the fucking
place. Insane, the people they let in. Or people that will catch and release somebody, commits a crime, and then they just get released and hopefully come back on their own recognizance.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, she was honest about it, and the government put her through the fucking ringer. So you need a waiver from Homeland Security. But I wound up, it eventually worked out. But that's the worst part, is waiting. It's the waiting. It's the embassies were closed during the pandemic. It's just the lack of control you have over your own life.
Yeah.
You're like, my happiness depends on some adjudicating officer that I can't talk to. I'll never know who he is. I'll never see his face. It's like, who's making this decision?
Mm-hmm.
Who's looking at this paperwork saying yes or no? That's the worst part.
Yeah.
It's the anonymity. It's like leaving it up just to like it's an automated system, it feels like. But there's real people, but you just don't see them.
And then is it like applying to a college where you're like, how do I make my application different than the other applications? Or is it like, do you have to like write out a paragraph about yourself? Or is it just all like, check this box and this box?
Very official. I had a great lawyer. He was a very dry man. Like, I mean, we went through three lawyers, and the third lawyer was a guy, like, you needed letters of recommendation and stuff like that. But there were certain letters from other lawyers that he didn't even use. He goes, no, because then they could say this, like, it's check the box. It's check the box. It's by the numbers. Like, letter, there's not a bit of variation in it. It has to be, you know what I mean? Like, it has to hold up to scrutiny. Like, they have to, their supervisors would have to look at it and go, yep, this was the perfect decision. So you have to really cut off any fat and make sure you have it. I got letters from a lot of people, and I think that helped. But none of it was a guarantee.
Yeah.
So when you have three lawyers, like after the first one, the second one, like how do you know it's time to get a new lawyer? Like what makes you go like, all right, we need to get to the third lawyer now?
Because I knew it wasn't going to work. I knew like that there was no, this lawyer was very hard to get to. Like my manager knew somebody who talked to someone who said, oh, the guy said, okay, I'll take his phone call from me. Otherwise, I never would have got a hold of this guy. But I knew that we couldn't do it our own. And our lawyer at the time gave us bad advice. And he said, look, this is a hash thing. She can never come in the country because it's not marijuana. It's hash.
Which is the same as like heroin, right?
It's a Schedule I drug. And then my wife, who is Norwegian, looked up the officer's handbook and said, wait a minute, this hash is the same. It's cannabis. And she found something that our attorney at the time missed. So I'm like, we got to get a new lawyer. Like,
wow.
You know
right.
what I mean?
I'm
a high school dropout. She's a high school dropout. And we figured this out. And this fucking lawyer didn't know it. So then we had to find a new lawyer.
Dude, that's the worst is when you say like, I'm a high school dropout, like that's how I look at myself. Like, I'm like, I'm not a smart guy. And when I see people doing a job and I have to tell them how to do it, I'm like, you must be just the biggest idiot in the world. Like, I remember I was living in a building in New York, like a nice building, and it had like downstairs where you get your packages. They also had they would send out your dry cleaning if you wanted. So I went down there with my clothes or whatever. I give it to the guy, and then I come back. I don't know what it was, 4 or 5 days. And I'm like, hey, is my clothes ready? And he's like, oh, no, you know, it won't be ready till this day or whatever. And I'm like, well, why does it take so long? He's like, well, you could have put it as rushed, but you didn't. You just put it as regular when you gave it to me. And I was like, oh, how much does it cost to do the rushed? He goes, it costs the same as the regular. I go, well, here's an idea. How about you put all of my shit as rushed every time? And he looked at me like I gave him the key. He was like, oh, I was like, can we just put everything as rushed? He was like, yeah. Like, let's fucking do that then. And I was mad for like a week.
Dude, that stuff, that little shit.
That's the stuff.
My dry cleaner, they always put wire hang. I feel like fucking Joan Crawford, but everything's in a wire hanger. My suit jackets, and I've asked them nicely. They just refuse to put a padding on the hangers. That's the stuff that makes you murderous.
You gotta find a new cleaner.
I want to, but I've tried.
It's not convenient.
They're so they come to the building and pick up. They're across the street. I mean,
yeah.
I've tried other ones and they take too long or the same thing. But those little life things, if you complain about it out loud, people go, shut up. That's a luxury problem.
Right.
But yeah.
It's like Larry David, you know?
That's, yes.
It's, you know, his arguments make sense.
Of course.
It's just like you're really letting yourself be bothered by it. But
it's a great way to describe it. It makes you murderous.
It makes you murderous. Yeah. But I know it's unreasonable.
100%.
Of course.
I have.
Well, it's not unreasonable. It's just maybe you shouldn't be like, hyper focusing on it.
Yes, my right. anger is my the level I'm feeling for it is unreasonable. Like being right. annoyed is fine, but the fact that I'll just go that motherfucker like, act out scenarios.
Yeah,
I picture his place on fire. Like it's just not rational.
Like right. if I am listening to a story of somebody murdering somebody, I go like, yeah, I get it, whatever. But then if I hear a story of like a guy bought $600 sneakers, but he can't pay his rent, I'm like, you make my whole mm-hmm. life miserable. Yeah. Like you make me, I just lay in bed at night blinking and I can't sleep because I'm thinking about, and it's all just things like that, where I'm like, God, this motherfucker, like what are you? The worst is when somebody does something like that and it's like, it was easier to do it the other way. Like,
yeah,
it was like, you know, like the bin for rush clothes is right here. You had to go all the way in the back to put my shit in the regular time bin.
And why wouldn't somebody think you'd want it rushed? Like, who's ever said, like, I'm gonna have your clothes back to you. Would you like them tomorrow? No, I'd prefer them next Thursday.
Yeah, it's like when Amazon is like, you want that in 3 days or one? It's the same price. I'm like, yeah, let's make it one.
One.
Yeah, let's do the 1 day delivery.
Who wants to wait 2 extra days for this shit?
Yeah.
It's stupid. But
I get mad if I have to wait 2 days now.
I do too. You get spoiled,
like, what,
right?
There's no overnight delivery?
Yeah, I'm like, is this coming from China?
Yeah.
Like, where is? And I'm like, I don't want it if it is.
It has made everybody.
It all is.
Life is so good and easy now and fast, but it makes like waiting an extra day feels crazy. Like I can't. Like last night, my Uber driver couldn't make it. Like the Uber Eats driver couldn't make it with food because you know South by Southwest, everything's closed, and just the anger at a person not being able to bring me treats that I didn't even need to be eating at 2 o'clock in the morning. Fat-headed idiot. What am I doing?
Yeah.
But I just can't stop eating. And I'm mad when a guy can't bring me food. It's like a spoiled existence,
dude,
almost.
I am such a piece of shit when it comes to the Wi-Fi. Like like the fact that we're talking through the air all day seamlessly this, and then I'm home and sometimes like I have trouble sleeping. So sometimes at like 4 a.m, they do like a reset and for 8 minutes I don't have Wi-Fi and I'm like, what's your fucking, you know, like I just fucking lose it. And I'm like, yo, you have it so fucking nice and cush. One time I'm at Jamie's place and like her husband and the kids are away at like a baseball thing and she's cooking all day for these kids. I mean, it's a chili, like all day. And right before they come home, they're like, oh, well, they're 10 minutes away. And she's like, okay, she gets out like the blender and I watch her pour chili into a blender. And she's sitting there blending it, talking to me like everything's normal. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, you're blending. She's like, well, last time we had chili, my kids said they don't like looking at the beans. And I was like,
he said he doesn't like beans, even though he's eaten it.
Sure.
So, but he said, I just don't like seeing the beans. I like the taste. I don't like seeing the beans. Sure. So I thought, well, let me blend it up. So
like
then you don't
chili
see any.
Drink?
No, he was going to eat it with a spoon. It was just like a thick soup now.
Oh, okay.
So
she
you know
pours
what I'm
it. She
I'm
pours
sure it,
it
looked
into,
nasty. She, looked they, like diarrhea.
They come home. She's working all day. They pour them into these bowls. And the first thing the kid does, he comes down and he sits over and he goes, Mom, this looks like diarrhea.
Yeah.
After she was cooking all day. And I'm like, motherfuckers. That's,
yeah.
Every day of my life. What are you talking about?
Yeah. That's humiliating and angering, but it's like, yeah, he's right.
Yeah,
yeah,
it
right.
does.
I can't argue lying.
It looks like there's nothing
it
looks more
it.
Like than diarrhea.
It does, yeah. And you will eat it. Yes,
right.
You're right,
enjoy your
and
diarrhea.
You're going to enjoy it. Yes.
Yeah,
it's funny too. Like I get that thing. Like when they're on the phone. Like I can't imagine being a kid with that because, as an adult, even you're on the phone and you're texting it and like you know my wife or anybody will say like I'm here and I'm like no I know but it's like I have you here or I have everything else in the world here. It's a really tough. To trade off a conversation.
I'm really conscious. I'm really conscious of it now. Like when if my son comes up to me, I will put my phone down and look at him. Yes, because it's just, I understand the message it's giving me. Like, yeah, wait a second. What I'm doing is more important. Sometimes it is. Sometimes I'll say, let me just finish this email. But if he comes over and sits next to me and I just stay on my phone, to me, that is not what I want our relationship to be. And I imagine the message he's subliminally getting from that. So if soon as they are coming to me, my phone gets put down.
Yeah, that's probably a better, a smarter policy as a parent. You know, I'll never have kids. So, I mean, but I think that's probably the way to do it.
I'm trying. Yeah.
I remember one time hearing like 4-year-old kid in the street, like hysterically crying years ago, screaming, mommy, get off your phone. Like legit. But I'm sure the kid was just being annoying or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just hit me where I was like, oof. That's it's like I don't know if you've ever seen that show Love is Blind. It's you know it's fucking junk food, but it's they like there was this couple who they were doing great and like it seemed like they were really gonna be fantastic everything because they're on the show where they have no phones. They go on the honeymoon where they have no phones. And finally they let them back into their regular lives and their homes and they give the guy his phone and the relationship completely changed.
Really?
Because he was literally like this and he'd be like, yeah, how was your day? And he'd be like this.
Yeah, like they weren't in love anymore. It was right. So sad.
It was really like it was.
They
one
were
of those things
actually
where
my favorite couple.
I
too.
Love them, and then it hit you where I was like, yeah. "Fuck!" Like that is such it's such an addiction. And I think like, you know, maybe he's aware of it, maybe he's not, but like, I think we're in a generation where we remember life before the phone, so it's very easy for us to be aware of like, oh, I'm on my phone too much. I'm this. Where people who. Like, you know, kids now who are 15, they don't know a life where you don't have a phone. So, like, they have nothing to compare it to.
It's also dopamine. Like, it's like you're, like, if you don't have a phone and you're with a partner, it's like you're getting that high from the, especially a new relationship, like the love or whatever it is from a new person. Like, that's my high. But then the phone, like, it's just constant, like, drips, little dopamine drips. It's not rational. What the fuck am I looking at? Facebook, Twitter, who cares? There's nothing I care about.
Yeah, posts you already scrolled through, too.
Already scrolled through, just looking to see if there's a new news story. It's like you're looking for that thing that goes ping, that just hits you in the brain, and it's just an absolute waste of time.
Yeah.
And I do it. I can't stop doing it. She calls me out on it, but she does it. Like, it's, you know, then my wife will be like, why are you on your phone? And like a minute later, she's on her phone. I'm like, stop pretending you don't know why I'm on my phone. We're both addicted.
I had Instagram for a very short period of time, and I got off of it right away because I knew. I was like, this is...
It's
real
so
bad.
Addicting.
Real
it's so bad.
Bad.
It's so bad.
I'm just such an
just scrolling,
addicted.
Scrolling.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll have it in my hand and be like, how am I even on Instagram right now? Like, I'll just pick up my phone and immediately my fingers will just go to it.
I would sit in a car and the first thing I would do is just like take out my phone and start looking. And I'm like, I don't even want to. I don't care. Yeah. Like, there's somebody's. It was just like a reflex. It became a reflex. And I was like, no. And I remember like I was on the West Side Highway in New York and like watching like an insane sunset. And I remember seeing people like, walk up, take a picture of it, and then walk away with their heads down, like to post the picture. And I'm like, no, you're telling people you're watching the sunset, and you're not. You're on your.
You took
like,
a picture of it.
What? Like, yeah. And I remember. And again, this is like very early social media, so it was like revolutionary to me. Where now it's like, yeah, of course everybody realizes this. But and right then I was like, nope, I'm deleting Instagram. I had it. I don't know. It's probably gone off my phone for like 10 years. I'm like,
oh,
fuck
really?
This thing. Yeah, I had it for a very short time where I was just like, oh, I know how bad this because like. I would be out and it would be like, oh, we should get a picture of this. And I was like, why is my fucking, you're a loser. Like, what? I just hated, I started to hate my own thoughts about it. Like, instead of enjoying people's company, I'd be like, oh, I want a picture of this to then show to everyone that we're here having a good time. And I'm like, what is this new thought pattern I'm having? It made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, the idea to capture it. And I'm guilty of it too. Like, I don't check at mentions. Like, I once in a while, of course, but I would always check them. And like, for years now, I don't because my neediness annoyed me. I'm like, you fucking idiot. What do you need to hear that you're not just you suck or whatever? Like, that you kind of get used to, but like, how much good stuff do I need to hear too? Like, what are you that pathetic that you need someone to go, that's great, or gives a shit?
Yeah.
Stop it. Like, so my own neediness disgusted me. So I really disciplined myself into not checking. I'll post something and then just jump off. A lot of times I used to delete Twitter from my phone. I'd make a post, plug a gig, and then delete the app and put it back when I wanted to post something else.
Well, that's the thing.
That's
like,
responsible.
It is, but it's also just from knowing how compulsive
I
am.
Of course, but that's what I mean.
Yeah. And I would also argue with fans too. Like, years ago, I have a hate mail folder in my Gmail. I mean, the amount of death threats, and you guys know, public figures, the people just, I got, and radio, it's a weird relationship.
Because they listen to you every day.
Every day, they hear every opinion you have. You weigh in on every subject, and they either agree or disagree. And I used to write back to them. And I got death threats from people who would use their real name. And that's when I'm like, you should be careful with this. Because if that guy's making a threat to your life under his real name, he's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That guy's crazy.
Yeah.
So I stopped responding.
Yeah.
You know what? I also feel like if you're, like, the way you're describing is the way I feel, where it's like, if you do see good things about you, it doesn't even make you feel good.
No.
Like, it's like this, what do you need to see good stuff? Where, like, I think if you're somebody like Corey Feldman, I think it's great. I think you should do it. Like, Corey Feldman sees, like, an article. He's been in the news nonstop for 30 years. He sees an article about himself, and it makes him feel so good. He's excited. He wants to show people this. Where, like, we would be, like, hiding looking at you. So it's like, what are you even, you're not even like proud of what you're, you know, it's a very, but I wish it was like, you know, the Corey Feldman vibes where it's like, dude, I'm in, cause it's almost fine to do that. But dude, we're like, no, you can't be like, hey, look, I'm somebody said something nice about me. It's like, fuck you. What are you doing? But
you know, what's interesting about Corey Feldman too, is his,
cause we love to talk about Corey Feldman.
He's a very interesting guy. And he's also like, he gets a lot of criticism, but it's almost like his lack of allowing that to deter him from doing something.
He's not stopping.
He doesn't give a shit.
Would be mortified if somebody said the choice I made was terrible. I'd be like, all right, like, or enough people were like criticizing, like you're saying, like what I was doing. He's not stopping his music career.
Nope. No,
you know?
He's not. He's plowing straight ahead.
He's plowing straight ahead.
Regardless of what they said, the one, what was the video? Was it Ascension Millennium or whatever? The one video that...
Ascension Millennium, is that the name of a song?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I'll tell you who's obsessed with Corey Feldman. Do you know Maria Menounos?
Yeah.
Her husband, Kevin Undergaro, is a friend of mine, and he's obsessed with Corey Feldman.
Wow.
Obsessed with his music. And that's the song he's obsessed with. I think he made him sing it at a party and Corey didn't want to sing along. But he doesn't care. He puts on the Michael Jackson hat and does what he wants. And it is admirable is that he likes what he's doing.
He believes in what he's doing.
Believes in what he's doing and he's okay. Some people can do that. Like some guy, I know comedians that can do that where they'll go, hey, watch this thing this joke I told. And they can watch a videotape of themselves.
Yep.
In front of other people and go like, right? It's incomprehensible.
I think they somehow are able to like detach themselves from the performance. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think those people are able to be, because to me, I'd be like, what an asshole that I seem like, that I'm like, look how great I am. But I feel like those people aren't that. They're almost more like, how did this turn out? I thought it turned out pretty good, right? Like they're able to really like objectify their performance and their art.
Yes.
And like disassociate like the person there that's right there. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And I can never decide if it's that or are they just mentally ill and narcissistic.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that they
I'm going to choose the first one.
Yeah, yours is a much nicer option.
I
think that they appreciate
asshole.
Their own art. And I'm like, look at that crazy fuck.
Yeah.
You might be right, though, that they can separate.
They can be both.
They can be both. Yeah. I couldn't do it, though. I'm
because
humiliated.
Narcissists believe their own bullshit. You know what I mean? You can't really survive as a narcissist unless you're drinking your own Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And I hate like watch. I'm sure you guys have both been in an audience watching yourself And if I know I'm coming up on screen,
I hate it.
It's
yeah.
Watching myself with an audience is the absolute worst.
They would make us watch the like the first episode of the season in Sopranos. I hate, and especially because it's not only an audience, it's also an audience where at the premiere I would have 10 of my best friends.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, you're just sitting there like, fuck, I want this to end. Like mm-hmm. the whole, you know, it was all like, I was just like, I want the open bar, you know, and I was excited for my friends to be at like the open bar and all of us together because we never were, you know what I mean? We were 16 years old and we're like, yo, there's a fucking open bar. And then you have to sit through this 2 hours of torture.
Would it be the first episode or the first two?
First two
of every season. Yeah. And it's so
corny.
We're
going to have to go
like,
through that again in June when we go to New York.
No. We have to watch? Yeah, but I could step out now. I don't feel like... I don't know.
You wouldn't watch it? I think you should.
Do we have to watch the first two episodes?
Not the first two. It's like two random ones. I don't even know what
two
season
random.
They're from.
Yeah,
we're doing something at some festival. They're having a bunch of us there, and they're going to show two episodes, and we're going to do a panel.
Is it easier for you guys to watch yourself as really young kids?
Yes.
Or like later?
Yeah,
because you're more detached from that, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I watched Sopranos for the first time during the pandemic, and I only got to season almost five, but it was the first time I was able to felt like I was actually watching it the way you would watch it as much as I could,
yeah.
Where I was enjoying the story and the characters and the show and not, I was a little, I'm looking at myself like, oh my God, I'm a little kid.
Yeah.
Like there's no judgment of myself
yes.
in that moment.
And why did you stop? Did you just get too busy?
I don't know.
Or does that make you uncomfortable?
I think I needed a break.
Oh, okay.
I think I needed a minute. I think because it actually became a lot to like process. I was sad. I was about things. Yeah.
And plus you guys are watching. It's easy as a fan to watch it, but you're watching people that you know intimately
yes,
who passed
exactly,
away.
Like
I can't. There's certain like Patrice O'Neill is one of my best friends. I can't listen to Patrice's shit. I can't listen to old radio stuff I did with Patrice because it just makes me too sad. It depresses me. I can't do it.
Yeah, of course.
So I can see why that would be very difficult to go through watching people who you cared about. So
yes.
I can't do it.
I'm the opposite of her where for me it's easier to watch something like more recent.
Really?
Because like sometimes I watch these if there's like a guest that we went on long and we have to edit it. Like if there's certain things I'm like, I don't want that in or, you know, I don't want to call anybody out, but sometimes you have a guest who you don't really like very much.
Oh, have you had that?
People notice. Listen, I don't. Maybe we
just
did.
Maybe we did.
Now, obviously, no names. No names. But can I ask you?
There'll be no way they could figure it out.
No. Because I've had.
No one noticed.
I've had things like that too, where you're just not clicking with a person, or there's something, or they come in with a fucking attitude.
Yeah.
What you don't have to say who the person was, but what was it? Was it were they snotty?
They didn't. Want to be here, it felt, from the second they walked in and to the point where we just felt like we don't have to do this. And it was just, to me, felt like a clunky conversation because there was just, I'm trying to find the right words here, like not a lack of respect, but a lack of respect. It was just like, you know, we're here just doing our podcast, we're not claiming to be anything, and I think this person was just coming with a lot of judgments about the two of us, it seemed, and then
but also when pretended like they didn't know who we were,
right? And then when we were trying to wrap it up multiple times, he kept going with it, and then I don't know, I now it's going to be obvious, but like it was disappointing because it just felt like, if you don't want to be here, we don't have to do this. We can record two episodes, just us, just fine. We're good. Like, I just felt very uncomfortable. And this is a place where I feel the most comfortable. So it was upsetting to me for that reason. And to the point where I was like, so in my head about it, I thought I was the only one that experienced it until later we were all like, oh, that was rough.
That should be the promo for this episode, by the way. me sitting here and you going, hey, if you don't want to be here, we don't have to do this.
They'll
think you're yelling at me.
Clickbait them.
But it's the worst thing you could, and again, the advantage of having interviewed a lot of people in my life and been on the road doing gigs and plugging gigs is that the worst thing a person can do when you're interviewing them is not give you information. Like, is to not engage or not talk. And there was one word, right? Or what do you want me to do with that? Like, we're having a conversation.
We were almost
me
getting
word
mocked
answers.
In all the answers. Every time we asked a question, it was the answer was making fun of us in the answer.
You know, in acting, you're supposed to do yes and. Like
sure.
Somebody says something, and to continue an improv, you go yes and. It was just no.
And
It was no. Wow. That was the opposite of yes end. It was everything was no.
Right.
When it ended, when it ended, did you talk to the person? Was there like a moment where like, oh, they
lovely.
Were
lovely. They were lovely. They were like, no.
I nah, thought I, they were not lovely. Well, not lovely.
He had a much different vibe after.
Yeah,
when
but
he
not
walked
lovely.
In, I was like, oh, this guy has no idea who we are, and is annoyed he's here, and if that just feels shitty.
No one right? doesn't know who you two are.
Well, I don't
it's
care.
Impossible.
That doesn't matter
yeah,
to me.
That doesn't. And like that if somebody's like Joe DeRosa came in and before we started, he's like, I have to tell you something. I hated Sopranos. I'm like, that's fucking awesome. Like that's great for the show. Like,
but why would he tell you that?
Because like, I did his podcast. We had a great time.
Like, he talks about it openly.
But it was cool. It was a fun. Like he had an opinion, which then created stuff to. And it's like, yeah, cool. This is fun. Like I like it. Where like this was just a brick wall.
Knowing who we are is not important to us. Like yeah, it just felt like course. This person didn't was like told that they had to be here and they didn't want to be here.
Here's why knowing who you are I think should be important, because to pretend they don't know who you are is dishonest and it's a power move. Like it doesn't mean like you're not being arrogant by saying they should know who you are. It's an iconic show, your iconic characters.
And they said they loved the show.
Right, so they know who you are. Of course.
It was a very like yeah.
It's a power play. And that's what's annoying about it. It's not the lack of someone knowing who you are. It's pretending they don't because there's a power in that or some. I've had that too, where me, they probably didn't know, but they played power shit in other ways.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? We just have to chat.
But don't you also think as a comedian too, that there's like this line that you have where you can poke fun and you can be funny and you can have your humor and like insert it in your commentary and in the conversation. But it just felt like there was just a real lack of respect for the two of us, and I just didn't like
you can that. Sense where it's coming, like where it comes from is a lot important. Like if someone is joking with, I've been shit on by people and it just made me laugh out loud,
yeah,
because I know that they like me,
of course. That's it. And we have sensitive humor, we poke yeah, fun of ourselves all the time.
I love the DeRosa episode. I love talking yeah. about whatever.
Joe's like a very funny
yeah,
and he's out of his mind. I mean he's fucking nuts. I know yeah, Joe all. For a long
no,
time
he's yeah. a real guy. He's nice and he's not, I don't know, it just I felt so awkward yeah. the entire time, and I was just trying to be really respectful, and then it just made me in my own head. And like I said, I hated being uncomfortable in a place that I'm always comfortable. So
I've yeah. had that too, though. Like you never get beyond that where somebody is all of a sudden, like you're always going to bump into a guest sometimes who's an asshole. Like yeah. it does happen. And just like yeah, I've yeah. done shows of people who are assholes, but usually it's the guest coming in being uncomfortable or being afraid and trying to mask that by dominating the situation by weird shit. It's usually fear-based or just arrogance-based. Fuck them, whoever they are.
Yeah, well, also, it's like, this is Tom and Christina's studio, so I didn't want to, like, midway through be like,
of
hey,
course.
Like, do you not want to be here? Like, is this
yeah.
a problem? Because I'm like, I don't know their relationship. I don't know what this isn't my... So 100%. I just kind of tried to, like, smile and keep going. But it was just like, yeah, it's like... And then you leave here, and like you said, it was the first time where I left here, and I was like, man, I didn't have a good time at fucking YMH Studio, which also made me grateful of being like, the 100 times I've
yes.
been there, I've had a fucking blast every single time, you know?
You need those once in a while, though. You need a yeah. good shitty one to make you appreciate... Like, if I had every good show, I would, like, never appreciate, like... Mm-hmm. But the fact that I have a few real fucking bombs to this day, I mean, yeah. I'll go on stage and just eat shit for 20 minutes. And when I have a good set, I'm like, wow, I'm glad that's worked out nicely.
Wow. I don't know how you do it.
Listen, thank you so much yeah. for being such a great guest. Thank you for having us on your show. We were in New York.
You always
thank
have
you
us
for,
on.
You know, I love
so
you guys.
Nice.
I would, and so does Sam. We would love to have you back.
Of course. Always, yeah.
I'm a fan, a tremendous... fan. I try not to be a complete fan when I come on.
No, I'm
on.
A fan too. Thank you for putting me in your book. That was
oh yeah, yeah.
That was very special. But yeah, Jim Norton, ladies and gentlemen, thanks.
Thank
for coming.
You guys.
Thank
yeah.
you.
By the way, before we go, speaking of not knowing who we are, that's why I was in the book. Because you said my name wrong.
I
at
said,
a...
But I knew who you were. I was. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had said Eiler, or I think it was Eiler, because someone had given me the incorrect pronunciation. But it was. But I knew you. And I was
yeah,
like, oh,
I'm
fuck.
Just,
but
yeah,
I,
yeah,
I
yeah.
think, yeah, I definitely knew who you were. And I was also, I should have just, this is, I think I've told you this. This is how dumb I am.
100%. It should have just been.
We talked about this the last time we were on your show. Yeah.
I should have just said, oh, there was a camera problem and redone it.
Right.
But I can't.
You panicked.
I have to tell the truth about it. Like, oh, I fucked up. I'm that's where my, just, I'm an idiot. Like, I should have just smoothed it. I don't know how to do it right. I should just. I should have done it right.
I mean, it's also a very rare situation where, like, you know, you're performing, there are cameras, there's someone in the audience, the cameras are on that. Like, it's, you know, that's not something that, like, you know, you train for. It was a weird thing. And then to introduce someone in the audience when you're on stage is weird. Like, it's all
I know.
Weird. But
I was 40. I should have done that better. I was introducing Lemmy every show. I was 40 and I just fucked up like an idiot.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I was
glad we
14.
Fixed that.
I was probably drunk and, you know, it's just, it was all right. But yeah, man, thank you so much for
thank
coming.
You.
I love you guys and thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. We'll see you guys soon.